I'm Lachlan Rouston.
And this is Raph Friedman, and we are best known as hosts of the Mind Muscle Project podcast.
And you're listening to the top resource for personal trainers, fitness coaches, and gym owners, the In the Black Business Podcast. All right, Project, welcome back to this episode. At this point, you're probably listening to this on the In the Black podcast, no longer the Mind Muscle Project podcast. In the Black by the Mind Muscle Project. But if you haven't, for some reason, if this podcast is coming out and you're still on the Mind Muscle Project feed, very likely this episode is going to move over and get deleted from the Mind Muscle Project feed. It will be over in the Black feed. So make sure you check that out. Go subscribe to that. Go follow that, because that is where all this content will be posted from now on and into the future, and will be removed off the Mind Muscle Project. So make sure you check that out. You've got till the end of August. So if you're still listening to this in August and you're in the Mind Muscle Project feed, it's going to be gone very soon. Okay. With that being said, we've done a very epic series with Sean, who joins me again today. And Raph, unfortunately, is not in the building, but it's good because he won't interrupt with his silly ideas. And we can just get to the real conversation. Today, we've got two things left. We've got marketing and team, as we've worked down the ladder from all the way from stuff like market into the model, finances. We've come to marketing today. So that's what we're going to talk about now. Sean and I talked before the show about this. It is a very broad topic. It could have many parts. It could go on for hours, but we want to give you guys some concise stuff, as usual, stuff that is practical and useful, because marketing is very important. It's very critical, but it's, you know, it's in the place that it's in for a reason. You know, we wanted to talk about the other stuff first, and we ordered it in a particular way because it's kind of how important it is. It's kind of sitting, not that it's not important, it's just kind of sitting where it's sitting for a reason. So today, marketing, Sean, let's kick this conversation off with, I think, the most important, distinction to make is the difference between marketing and branding.
Yeah, excited to get into this one. And, you know, this actually came briefly in one of our other conversations in a previous episode. So excited to dive further. It's a very confusing topic. What is marketing? What is branding? You know, and branding is something you can't really, you know, touch necessarily, but you feel it. And so how do you articulate what these things are? And the way we start to describe this in a way that hopes everybody can put their head around it is, you know, a brand and really ultimately your brand strategy needs to live between the business strategy, which is number one, right? Your business strategy is, if you're a business owner, your business strategy is the most important thing. That comes at the top of the mountain, right? And where are we going? How we get there? And how do we make money? And, you know, who do we serve? What do we sell? All that kind of stuff is in your business strategy and your business plan. Underneath that is the brand strategy, which is really the connection to the humans emotionally, right, in this process. So, you know, this is around what you say. It's kind of the intersection of what you say and do and how people feel. And we'll come back to that in a second. And then below that lives the marketing strategy. So we want to understand, I think it's very important to know the difference between a business strategy, a brand strategy, and a marketing strategy. And we're going to start with brand because it lives between your business strategy and your marketing strategy. And it really is important, even in small business space, when we're not a big, you know, company, but to have some concept of the thing that the place in the hearts and minds of our consumers and clients and target market we want to own, what is that? And we can get clear about that. We can start to think about the experiences and the journey that we create for the people we serve and start to connect those dots. That's an important real estate to own.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always, when we're talking about brand, I think the best way to think about it is that every company has marketing, but not every, well, they have some marketing if they've made a sale, but not every company has a real brand. And I think the distinction is, like, you know, I said, think of Nike. Everyone thinks of a certain emotion, a certain image in their head and way that it makes them feel. And then you think Jim's Accounting, don't think of anything. You might have never have heard of Jim's Accounting because he's got no brand. There's no strength in his brand. Doesn't mean it's not a good business that makes money. It just means there's no brand there. So you've made some distinctions about what goes into a brand and how it makes people feel. But I think the most important distinction, which is great what you told me, was it's, do you own the category in the heart and the mind of the consumer or the customer?
Yep.
Your target customer.
Yeah. So let's just play the game, right? So we talked about this when we were preparing for the interview today, and I asked you, who makes the best cars?
Yeah, Porsche.
Okay. And for you, that's your obvious answer, right? Someone else might say a different answer. So we own a Tesla at my house. We have a Tesla Model X, and for me and for my family, that's the best car. I wouldn't take a Porsche over that today in my life.
Not even the electric Porsche?
No, it's too small. It's too small. Yeah. Actually, one of my wife's best friend, her husband he's the first electric Porsche SUV owner in Australia. It's coming in here shortly. It's like,
oh, Porsche has an SUV electric one.
He's going to be the first owner of that in Australia. It's coming into town here shortly. It's like $200,000. So, yeah, they have one, but still I wouldn't trade it for the model for, so we have I'm a dad of a 2-year-old, and the ability to hit the button on the Model X wing doors to open up and dump your son into his car seat when, you know, shit's hitting the fan with a toddler is priceless. It really is. And it's got plenty of room and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a big fan of the Tesla Model X for many reasons, but that's one of them. So anyway, back to the conversation is, your example, the Porsche, for me, Tesla, we have our experiences and we have our perception. And ultimately, that product and that brand owns the category in our mind and our hearts for us. And that means that brand strategy has achieved its goal of, when you ask us what is the best, you say Porsche and I say Tesla, right? And so that is when you are winning as a brand, and your brand strategy has succeeded in that you own the category for the best option, right? For your ideal customer. You've dominated the market, really, right? So that's a good way to think about, like, there's a lot of things that go into it. And we could do a whole workshop here on, like, you know, the 20 things that go into your brand strategy and what makes up your brand. But ultimately, you know, to make it really clear and concise, a good definition of success with your brand strategy is, do you own the category? Are you the one? When someone asks, who's the best X, do they say your name, you know, in your town, right? And that's relatable to everybody that's listening to this podcast. So that is the whole, you know, when you've achieved that, you've won.
Mm. And I would just say, like, to the business owners or the future business owners out there that are looking to potentially start a gym or start their own brand, is remember, you can obviously make the argument here, because it exists, that you can have a very great business without investing heavily into a brand. But just remember that you will be going up and competing against people that want to have the best brand in the world. They want to own the hearts and minds of the same customers that you have. And if you're not going into it trying to be that brand, eventually you'll get beaten out by that other brand that's trying to be the best. So I know lots of good businesses that do well that don't have that, you know, they don't have that ambition to be that kind of brand. They want to be a great business, but it is hard to compete against the person that's trying to build the most powerful brand in the world, especially to answer that question, like you said. And I think a really good example in our industry is Gold's Gym. I think we talked about it a couple of episodes ago, but back end, you know, the back end of Gold's Gym has been a bit of a mess for a long time. But why I love a brand and why
IP,
a brand so important.
The IP has a lot of value. Yeah.
Exactly. Still no matter how gym, much, right? Exactly. No matter how much you fuck it up.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's not many things you can build in your business that are, like, close to invincible, but a brand is that thing. And that's why I think it's so important. And that's why, you know, I'm infatuated with the idea of building Locker Rooms brand, because you can make a lot of mistakes, small mistakes that a brand can protect you from, a really good brand from, you know, Nike, right? And Apple, they make loads of shit products every year. Like, people have AirPods, they open up first day, they don't even work. You know, people have laptops that just conk out for no reason outside of, you know, Apple support. Nike makes shoes that fall apart in the first kilometer. Like, they get loads of that shit. But do you think of them as shit brands? No, absolutely not. You think of them as the best in their category. And that's because of the brand. The brand insulates and protects you from the mistakes that you will inevitably make in business, which is why I think building a brand is so important. And actually, there's a really good story. If you watch F1 on Netflix in season 3, they do a really good... No, I should say that's wrong. Toto Wolff, who's the owner of Mercedes, he does a really good podcast. I think it's called the High Performance Podcast. He gets interviewed and they talk to him about when he got hired and he came into Mercedes, how he built them into the best F1 team in the world. And he gives an example of what he tells this story where he had Mercedes, the brand, in his mind as a certain way. And he said he walked in on day one as the CEO, the new CEO of Mercedes, and he looked at the reception desk and he said there was a coffee cup there with a coffee stain underneath it. And he said, instantly in that day, I knew the brand was off track because the brand that had been in my mind was now not representative the moment you walk into Mercedes F1 racing team. He goes, what? How is the best F1 team in the world? The reception desk got a coffee stain on it. And that really rung true for me. And I think it's an example that the brand is not just what content you put online, but it's how every single touch point represents itself. It's from how my staff wear their locker room gear. It's what brand I choose to print the locker room gear on. It's how I expect my staff to cut their hair. It's how I expect the color of their shoes to be, how well they clean their socks, you know, how they talk to people, all these different components, how clean the gym is. These things contribute to your brand. And the good thing is, as you start to be really consistent over time, when a staff member comes in that hasn't cut his hair or is wearing the wrong color shoes or, you know, the gym's a little bit dirty, it's off brand and it's obvious and it's an easy fix. It goes, oh, that's weird. That's not how you guys do things. And you notice it straight away and you can fix it. So that's why I think it's so invaluable. And there's just a few examples of like how you run your gym. And I think a lot of that is kind of based in the values of the owners and the founders and their standards that they set.
Well, let me just add a couple of things that I think are important context, because we're you know, when we are passionate about building businesses, we are entrepreneurs, we love reading and watching stories of companies and their success. But I do think it's important of like, how do you relate this to like, you know, I'm a gym owner. I don't have a ton of money. I can't throw money at like, you know, crazy, you know, you can spend $500,000 on the logo and it, you know, it changed, you know, 2 degrees and all this kind of stuff with agencies. Right. So it's not really, you know, when we talk about branding, I think a lot of people think of like, colors and logos and, you know, fonts and design and, visual pieces, you know, and later on, when you have a lot of money and you're trying to go to the next level with a company, and I realize I'm not defining these categories yet of stages of growth of business, but that stuff becomes important and will continue to go. The most important thing that represents your brand, though, at every stage, and especially in the early days of building your company, is what you should refer to and you're talking about, but I want to give a name to it, is the client experience, right? So the touch points of where your customer interfaces from every point in the journey of like, how do you answer the phone? How quickly do you respond to someone that reaches out with an email? What do they see? You know, in the example of Mercedes, what do they see when they walk in the door visually? How does the temperature feel? What music is playing? Do people look like, you know, they took a shower today, like, or they just rolled out of bed? It's the staff, you know, like all these things in the experience and the positioning of the experience and how they are treated and how those things make them feel in the experience is the most important thing, right? And you don't need money to create a good experience. You need to be really, really fall in love with caring for your customer and creating an incredible experience for your customer. And that is ultimately, we're in the service business and differentiating not just service delivery, but the experience you create for the customer you serve. If you fall in love with that and you don't need money to do it, you just need to fall in love and care. If you do that early on, that's the thing that will take you to a lot of money and to a lot of profit that you can go spend money, stupid money on stupid shit like colors and logos and things that, you know, won't have as quick an ROI or valuable ROI early on in the business that you can't even fund the investments in. So I think it's really important to know what to focus on and what we really say when we're talking about a brand and have contextualized that in the journey of stages of growth of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that's branding. As we know, loads of different components, but marketing. What is, or how do we define marketing?
Yeah. Marketing is how I acquire a customer ultimately. How do I, you know, create awareness, engagement, you know, and really when we talk about the, you know, the core KPIs of marketing, you know, that matter, it is the number of leads, you know, and we talk about leads are someone giving their contact information, right? So they're going to download, let's say, something on your website, or they're going to message you, you know, like today in social, right? DM me, slide into my DMs for X gift, right? There, now you've got a lead, right? It may or may not be an email address, maybe other types of lead capture, but you've got their details in some way and they're engaging with you. So that's a lead. We define a prospect, you know, in our world with MP clients, as someone who is actually scheduled to come in and meet with you and engage your sales process for your services. And then obviously we've got the number and the show rate of those consultations. We teach a consultative sales process predominantly in most cases for premium services. And then you've got your, you know, and then that's going to feed into your sales metrics, obviously units, conversion, you know, value of transaction, all that kind of stuff. And then you've got efficiency within all this stuff, right? What is the cost per lead? What is the cost per sale? What is the ROI? You know, what is the acquisition cost, you know, and the ROI on a cash and accrual basis? Those are all kind of important things. But if we had to break down marketing, you know, very simply, it is, you know, success is around efficiently acquiring customers at a reasonable cost for the business to be profitable and grow.
There you go. Simple.
That's it. That's all it is. That's all you got to know. So not, you know, it's simple yet. There's a lot going on there, right? And it is a very confusing process. So we're going to talk about a few things that kind of fit in your core marketing strategy today.
So I'll cut you off one sec, Sean. I will say, just to round out what you said about marketing, is I think that branding still occurs at every level of business. So someone that's still, you know, been a customer for 10 years is still being affected by your branding. Whereas in some ways, marketing has more of an endpoint. Once someone's kind of in the business, has sold, yeah, there's more marketing that can happen later, but generally the marketing cycle for them is more or less over.
Yeah. And it's just important, you know, I think there's a lot of confusion around these terms and definitions, and, you know, we won't go too far down below, but, you know, it's all marketing, branding. There's a lot of intersections here, right? So the client experience, it's a lot of intersections. All those things combine, and understanding those overlap points are really critical. Yes. But I think for the story, what we're talking about today, if we talk about really acquisition side of bringing people in the door to talk to you about signing up, and then your sales process takes over, that's, we'll kind of limit the marketing conversation today, because most, you know, gyms that are listening here to this conversation need a better way to solve that problem. You know, you don't have a line of people waiting at the door to get in your facility, and you need to grow the amount of people in your facility to make money and make a profit and stay around. So yeah, we'll focus on acquisition, you know, client experience and lifetime value, and is ultimately the big thing to stay in business, because we can't afford to be a transactional business like, you know, the pizza shop. You know, you look at the pizza shop, they got to sell X amount of pizzas every Friday and Saturday night, or, you know, they don't have cash, they're not paying the bills. It's a transactional model. We live in a subscription, essentially, model business, whether it's a true subscription or, you know, a renewal of a high ticket service sale. But essentially, it's a small number of customers you're relying on to continue to engage services, which is the beauty of the business, but also critical to manage that experience, to invest in that experience, in that brand, in that heart and mind of your customer. Be the one for them, right? Fall in love with them, help them fall in love with you. So, but yeah, that's another episode for another day. Today we'll focus on the acquisition side.
Yeah. So I think obviously the first point and the most critical point to get right is obviously who we're targeting. We've talked about it obviously in the market episode as well. But yeah, it's important to understand your ideal client. And in terms of just some resources that I would recommend for some people, one of the best books I've read on this is, well, all of his books, Seth Godin has some really good stuff here about breaking down your ideal client. The first one, This Is Marketing, is one of his books. I'd recommend reading that. I'm sure you've read. It's always a collection of similar sort of thoughts, just written differently. But he has some really good ways of distinguishing this particular topic. Who is your ideal client? And you've got demographics, geographics, psychographics. I will say one of the things he always says that really sticks with me is he always has this line where it's like, I think I'm going to butcher it, but speaking from the client's perspective, it's like, people like us do things like this. I love that line, because it's so human. It's exactly what we are, you know, CrossFitters. You know, they think to themselves, we are CrossFitters, and, you know, we do crazy workouts harder than everyone else, and we do these things. You know, boxers, you know, we believe in, you know, the sweet science of boxing. We are do this and we do things like that. You know, we wear the bling and we love the Mayweather lifestyle, you know, but then, you know, the CrossFitters think about themselves and do other things differently. And I think when you tap into that and you say it like that, people like us do things like this, then yeah, you really start to understand your market better.
So that's what we're going to get into. So we're going to talk about a few things today: target market, positioning, content pillars, lead gen, really being a lot of big stuff. That's really getting into position, the intersection of positioning, messaging, targeting, you know, and essentially it is your marketing and aspirational identity, right? So we are X. Is this who you want to be? And do you want to be one of us in X tribe, right? And really putting that, you know, and there's some instances where that's positioned very polarizing, right? Us versus them. Right. You see that all the time in politics and other forms of marketing and divisional sports marketing, which is, you know, very successful. Ultimately, polarization is helpful in driving emotional response, and emotional response reactions drive actions and behavior. And that drives, you know, marketing outcomes. But there's different tones. There's different, you know, ways we can do that. You can do, you know, they can be very aggressive, polarizing positionings, you know, positions, or they can, you know, and identities, or they can be more inclusive. And, you know, and again, it gets down to values, right? And all those kind of things that are important to the business you want to create and the customers you want to serve. You know, we know, you know, a lot of, and there's no one right or wrong. It's not like you have to be, we're only for these people and we hate everybody else, you know, very divisive to build a base. You can build an inclusive base as well. You know, it's around who you are and what you want to do. And there's very successful examples of companies and brands, you know, that run in different ways here.
Yeah. I think the better you do that as well, and the better you understand it, it helps you build the business long-term. So the value, I think, or probably one of the understated values of doing this really well, is that it helps you just find more of the people that are right for your business. And if you don't really define it or go hard in it, then you get all kinds of random people walking in and you build like a random community in the context of a business, a random customer base, and they don't all align. So then you start branding a certain way, you start bringing out products in a certain way, and you got divided people. We didn't say we wanted that. Other people said we wanted that. Whereas you want alignment in all the stuff that you do by bringing in the right customers, which is why we wanted to like get really strict and define who the person was for Locker Room, right? Who is this industry and business leader? What level of fitness are they at? What are their values? Like, what industries do they work in? You know, a business leader could be anyone from all kinds of different CEOs, but what like particular one did we want to go after? And then having that filter just helps to build the business successfully long-term.
Yep, absolutely. So all this is really important. You know, we're starting with this target, right? This target around who are they? Demographics is like age, gender, you know, other things we know about them to be true, their careers, their family life, you know, all those are kind of, you know, boxes that we check. Then we get into geographics. So if you're delivering face-to-face services, right, where do they live and work? They have to be within a reasonable area to be able to come in frequently. And most, you know, most gyms and facilities, you know, it's a, it's like an 8-mile radius, from that location that where people have worked to be able to come in, you know, on a frequency that makes sense for the business. If you're in major metro markets, you know, Sydney CBD, for example, you can even be tighter than that.
One block.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, New York is a great example of that as well. And other cities. So that's important with a local service business that requires face-to-face delivery. And then psychographics, you know, this is the most important, because people can be of a certain age. They can be of a certain, you know, gender. They can live in a certain area. It's really psychographics is, you know, their feelings and their emotions and the problems and goals and how they connect with those to make purchasing decisions. Ultimately, there has to be a strong desire to solve a problem or achieve a goal for someone to make a purchase. Yeah. And especially to continue with a service, you know, in our case where what we sell is hard. You know, you're going to give me money to then do these really hard things with changing your lifestyle in every way, shape or form to get the outcome that you want. And it's going to be difficult and most people fail. You know, so it's an interesting thing that we offer, you know, as fitness coaches and facilities, and psychographics really matter. You know, there's a lot of people that are unhappy or are, you know, have a goal, but they don't have a strong desire to take action to resolve that inner conflict. There has to be that inner conflict for people to, you know, engage in behavior that's difficult and changes the default line they're on today. So, you know, things that matter. What are their goals or desires? What are their problems? How do they feel about, you know, what's preventing them from getting what they want, right? What's standing in the way? How do they feel about those things? What are the thoughts they have around the things they're standing in the way that keep them from actually taking action and figuring those things out? Because every human is capable of making a decision. Why haven't they made one, right? That psychology and those beliefs are really important. We talk about, you know, the ultimately we're helping to, you know, with the people that know they want to buy is easy, just be in front of them. And I say easy, most people aren't doing that right today in our industry. But the whole other group of people who are interested in solving the problem, but haven't taken action, you know, the more we can understand that psychology of what's preventing them from taking action, and then engage in education and storytelling and, you know, brand messages that shift belief is really what it comes down to. And that's how you also build authority and domain expertise and, you know, support charging premium rates, support owning the best category in your space. You know, those are the things that really make you a good coach and also make you a good business owner, a good marketer, a good branding expert. You know, it's all about understanding what's in the mind and the heart, and what is the limiting belief ultimately from holding people back from taking action, and how can you help, you know, open their awareness and shift their belief to take action.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're talking about. So
my most practical advice to do this is to pick your best like 2 to 3 customers or clients and like run that through them. Demographic, geographic, psychographic, the thing that made them purchase in the first place. Ask them, interview them, find out more about them, ask them good questions. And definitely do that. Don't like just assume stuff about why they bought or whatever, or who they are. Ask them those questions, and I think it's very revealing. And we did it a while back, and we continue to do it, and it is very helpful. Yeah, very helpful. And it doesn't have to be as formal as a sit down, but sometimes in a coaching session, you know, I might ask a client, hey, what was the reason you actually ended up deciding to join with us? Like, what tipped you over the line? And it's like, it's usually a different reason to what I thought and what I assumed. So it's very valuable information.
Yeah, and I think the most fun way to serve this up is, you know, what helps you become a better coach and a better leader is the same thing that helps you become a better marketer, is be really curious about,
yeah,
what do people think? How do they feel? Why do they think that way? Why do they feel that way? You know, what's underneath that? And the more you are just very, very curious, you have to be curious all the time and not, you know, judging and not thinking you understand something, but always looking for what's going on here, what's happening underneath the surface. How can I understand my customer better, my prospective customer better? How can I understand myself? Like, this is a massive process of growth and discovery and learning as an entrepreneur, business owner. Anyway, but particularly when we get into how to become effective in leading and serving the people we want to make a difference in their lives, and if you know. I think this is something you should commit to for the rest of your life, is if you just continue to be very curious and ask questions and seek to understand and stay humble, that, you know, you there's a lot to learn here over the whole lifespan of you're going to be involved in working with people, whether it be directly serving customers, whether it be leading team members, whether it be just, you know, working through your own stuff as you grow a business. This is fascinating. Information and subjects to explore, and just become very, very curious and stay curious. If you do that, you're going to be moving in the right direction.
And to add to that as well, be open to the answers as well, because you want it to be a certain thing to why someone joined or why they like your brand or how they ended up, you know, in a conversation with you. And quite often it's maybe not what you expect, or something where you're like, oh, I can't believe that they, you know, just like the color black, and that's why they ended up joining, because they wanted a black gym. You don't like the equipment or whatever? Oh, no, the equipment's not that good. It's just, I think it's a cool brand. So, like, it's a cool color. I like the logo. So, you want to join? You're like, shit, I don't even like the logo. But okay. So, you'll get answers that you might not completely like, but it's good. It's revealing stuff because, you know, you might think something's working for a reason. It's actually not. It's something else. So, yes. In terms of more practical stuff, or that we can kind of move into a bit more tangible, let's talk about the content pillars. I know people always want to figure out, well, we get stuck in the weeds here talking about all the different types of content that you can put out, how we can create authority in the marketplace. But what's a good starting point here that you like to take us through in terms of content?
Yeah, so I think, you know, again, once you really are clear who the customer you want to serve is and what their goals are and what their problems are and, you know, what they need and what's going to be the path to succeed, you want to start to understand what are those lanes. And again, this gets to your delivery of services and your methodology and product and what you're an expert in, subject matter expert in, whether it's being an expert in pain management, being an expert in sports performance, being an expert in, you know, corporate
weight
fitness,
loss,
right? With locker room or, you know, all those things, right? Nutrition. What are the subject matter domains that you want to be an expert in that are, you know, to solve that problem or achieve that goal? And then how do you start to share that knowledge, you know, with your market and your content, whether it be short form, like social video or pictures or captions or whatever, or long form, like articles or, you know, giving speeches and talks and events and all kinds of things. So short and long form types of content, different formats, but essentially to share knowledge, educate people on better paths to solve their problem, achieve their goal. And you're the one delivering that information. So therefore you are building your authority and domain expertise and not being a generalist, but being an expert and specialist, right? And specialists get paid more. They're in demand more, right, for that market, and they can charge premium rates, premium margins, and they become, you know, carve out a space again in the mind and heart of the consumer as being the best one for X, right? And especially in fitness today, if you want the, you know, to move into more premium brand, you're going to need to be more selective in a premium customer, and, you know, premium customers want experts. They don't want you know, generalists, they want subject matter experts and they want the best, you know, especially in our industry with fitness. Have you ever heard anyone say, I want to hire the cheapest, most discounted trainer I can find? No, right? What does everybody say? They want the best. And what do we see about the best? They're the most expensive. And what makes them the best? Well, they seem to be the most knowledgeable. They've got the most, you know, education. They, again, have premium look and feel to the brand. They've got the best case studies and examples of clients they've helped. All these things position us as subject matter experts. Proof plays in along here. We'll talk about that today. But the content is a place that everybody can begin, right? Because we're in a digital age where there's so much content, so much information, there's too much information, right? And people are overwhelmed and confused around what to do for them and for their goals. And so when you can take all that information and you can start to organize that in a way that best supports and makes this easy and simple to understand and execute on for the market you want to serve, you are the expert. You don't have to be the creator of all the knowledge, but you have to be the one who delivers and organizes knowledge, and doing that in a great way is what builds your expertise and your domain authority. And that's a really important thing to be doing early on in your career. Like, again, pick a client you want to serve, type of client you want to serve. I really understand what is the number one goal or problem you're solving and start to, you know, make your content around that. If you do that, you know, sharing stories, people helped with that, sharing your knowledge around that, you know, you really can't go wrong. You will be heading in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the mindset that comes with it as well. Like, you've got to feel like you own it in your mind and then believe it and sell it, you know, with confidence, you know, once you become the authority. Because there's plenty of people out there who could be the authority and charge accordingly and put out content accordingly, but don't, just because they don't have that confidence. Even though, you know, objectively they have every right to be, you've got to believe it as well. You've got to come with that confidence. And then we're going to break this down even further. So now we're kind of positioning ourselves that way, and that's, you know, we're the authority, we're charging the right rates. There's just loads of ways that people can generate leads. And I think obviously that's been a huge focus for a lot of gyms for a long time. But everything we've talked up and about up until this point is you've got to get that right first. And that's why most people don't. They don't get that stuff right first. So then they go to lead gen and it doesn't work. Well, it's like because of all the reasons we've just talked about, that's why. So now comes lead gen and you've got loads of different ways to do it. Obviously there's organic stuff that comes from local search directories, Yelp reviews, Google. got social stuff, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. I know we're investing heavily in LinkedIn right now, SEO stuff. So all the stuff that goes into the content on your website, the blogs that you create, how you even just structure your website and how it shows up, referrals, and then PR. And from the lead gen, just as an example, you know, it's good to have as much of it as possible, but by doing the stuff earlier, like the client psychographics and the demographics, you realize that I can cross a bunch of this stuff off because they're not really on this sort of stuff. My clients don't really Google search for gyms, you know, talk in the context of locker room. They're not on TikTok. They're not really on Instagram or Facebook, but they're definitely on LinkedIn. So let's target that. We need a really good website because very likely we're going to have a PR campaign and it's going to link to the website. So we need good SEO. We need PR. And then obviously every good business has referrals. That's just a very organic thing that comes. So what are your thoughts on some of those things? And I think potentially some people get too locked into, you know, just Instagram or just Google search, and they miss that whole picture of all those I talked about.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different types of strategies and tactics and sources when it comes to lead gen. And by the way, this is a place we can get really overwhelmed quickly. And the job is, you know, never done, right? There's never like not more to do. So that's why we got to really take the marketing plan in the context of the marketing plan. Its goal is to achieve the business plan. And if we're the marketing plan is hitting its targets and we've met our business goals, then we're good. And so kind of our question becomes in this overwhelming area called marketing and lead gen, what's the simplest path, the most efficient path to get to the goal for the business? And as you said, all these things prepare us to be more effective and be efficient and effective in our strategic marketing plan, lead gen plan. But I would say, yeah, I think the overall issues are people don't do all the work that sets us up to win. Then they don't understand the landscape of what is an organic strategy, what is a partner type strategy, what is a paid strategy. And they're, you know, just doing what they see other people doing and they think they should be doing, but there really is no plan or understanding of actually how to drive performance in terms of the strategy, the tactic, and really the execution and measuring and monitoring this in a way that delivers results to the business. So, ultimately you need more is better. You can go deep with a few of these things, and then you need to go wide because you can't be dependent on, you know, one thing and then it stops working.
Yeah.
For some things, you know, beyond your control, right? So a lot of people, you know, Facebook ads was 5 years ago. If you were early on with Facebook advertising, you got a lot of leads very inexpensively, and there's a lot of traffic today. You know, doesn't work quite like it did 5 years ago. And a lot of people that grew their business, you know, with that strategy, it stopped working. Things changed, and then their business dried up because they didn't have any other, you know, leg to stand on in terms of skill sets or strategies or tactics in the marketing plan to drive leads for their business. So it's very important that we diversify here. It's also important that you don't have, I mean, a good service business, we do it right with organic and maybe a little bit of partners. You don't have to be advertising. And I think if you don't have a good foundation organically in marketing for your business, you don't think you're going to solve that problem by throwing money out on advertising because you won't. You know, you need to understand your core business, your offers, your message, your engagement with your audience. You know, all those things teach you a lot early on. Again, everybody, if you're delivering, you know, it gets back to referrals, right? Let's talk about the most basic form. You still need people that can hear like, yeah, I get referrals. It's like telling me like, yeah, I get squats and pull-ups and push-ups and sit-ups are good, but they're not doing them. They're not doing it correctly. If you check their form, they suck, you know, and they don't get results, right? So if you are not, I will tell you just as a barometer of success right here, you're probably listening to this podcast, you're going, yeah, I get referrals. I would say, show me the last 3 months of new customers you signed up, like literally on a sheet of paper. Tell me how many of them came by referral. And if you're not pulling in like 30, 40, 50% of your new customers by referral, then I would say either you have a shitty client experience or you have a shitty system and process for referrals, and you're probably struggling with lead gen and acquisition, and solving this thing with advertising is not going to fix your business problems. This is really important to invest time in the fundamentals at its core, a service business, you know, and more premium it is, the better for driving that in our business. And again, it's not like about just cracking the whip on your trainers. They need to get me referrals. They're not getting me referrals. You know, get out of here. You know, this isn't, you know, 20 years ago and don't blame your staff. You know, look in the mirror and start to take ownership of what you can control to create a better system, a better structure, all the things that are going to drive this better tactically, systems, messaging, offers. There's a lot of stuff to it to be effective, and it should be the core of what we do.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now that that is what we did. We cracked the whip on the staff. You got to be asking for referrals. You got to be getting us more referrals. And it never fucking worked. No matter how many times we brought it up in meetings, no matter how good our coaches were, it never worked. And then once we started cleaning up delivery, focusing on all the things we've talked about previously and systems and just all these other areas that were weak, they happen. Like, yes, there's a system for asking for them. Yes, there's a way of creating them, but people want to bring you people. And I think that that was just a testament to, like, it wasn't going to be us yelling at the staff. It was going to be us doing a better job by being a better business. And that's when it just started happening more easily. Hey, I've got someone I really want to bring them, you know. Oh, this is such a good gym, so good. I got a friend that actually would love this. Here's their number, you know. So that was the game changer for us, is we don't even ask our staff for them anymore. They just, it just happens. It brings them. We have, like, a, you know, a script that they can follow and how to ask for them, but we're not out there forcing them cracking the whip to ask for referrals. It happens much more organically. And that's a beautiful thing. So next thing we should talk about, and really something that I think we doubled down on with Locker Room, is partners. And I think being in a CBD, it's a little bit easier because there's so many businesses nearby. And with Locker Room, there's so many avenues to do this. I'll tell you a few which will be helpful for the listeners. And then Sean, I'm sure you can give us some examples of people that maybe are not CBD based. But for one of us, one of our services, we're doing like a doctor who's going to be doing blood work and DEXA scans and all that sort of stuff. So partnering with them, because they work specifically with CEOs and stuff as well, a lot of their clients. And so connecting in with them, Amex Centurion is a partner of ours. Obviously, they have a lot of our customer client base as well. So striking up a partnership with them and working out a deal that works really nicely with them has been really helpful. And then also, just with like some of the local businesses in the area, there's a very premium sort of high-end restaurant slash bar where a lot of our clients eat and dine and go to. And that was more just about creating a relationship with them, not putting down anything in paper, but me spending time there, getting to know the owners, liking each other. And so that when they have the conversation with clients that might be talking about something fitness related, our name could come up. And so that was a less formal partnership, but an important partnership nonetheless with another local business.
Yeah. So just, you know, the thing I would encourage people listening to think about here is, where are my customers hanging out? You know, what groups do they belong to? What associations, what clubs, what other businesses are like serving my customer that there's a, you know, there's a bucket of them there that I could go connect with, engage with. And if you do this, you know, again, it really reduces your acquisition costs. You can, you know, bring on heaps of customers at once, and you can create some ongoing relationships that feed your business, not one time, but, you know, all year long and then some, and for many, many years to come. So partners just make your business more fun. It's more exciting. You build relationships, you open up the ecosystem, you know, things move faster, happen quicker, and, you know, referred prospects, you know, their sales cycle is shorter, they buy more, they buy faster, you know, and they're just more fun because they get it, right? There's some implied trust there. They generally are going to connect it with the brand and the values in the community. And, you know, it's there's no surprises. So less surprises, let's put it that way. Big fan of partners. It's always been a huge part of what we teach and how I build my fitness business, you know, how we build MPE and how we advise all of our clients to do. So have fun with that. And a lot we can talk about there. And then lastly, advertising. Look, at the end of the day, I call advertising anything you're spending money on to get people in the door, whether it be digital, whether it be direct mail, whether it be, you know, print ads, you know, different things that you spend money on, print or digital, to, you know, get in front of a prospect with your, you know, your words and your images and your offer. And advertising does work. Advertising is effective. I would say it's in a lot of cases, you know, people don't trust advertising as much as they, you know, especially now in the age we're in, you know, they trust it even less, and they continue to think, you know, it's a bunch of lies. They know you're going to say good things about your business, and you know, even if they see an ad for initial brand awareness, it all quickly goes to search now and reviews and, you know, third party endorsements and and people want to know before they come in and talk to you or look at spending money with you, what do other people say about their experience in working with your business? And can they trust you based on what other people say? Either that's face-to-face, like their friend, right? Referral, or digitally online and reviews and so on. But advertising today can get awareness, but it really is not the key that drives the sale and the quality of the customer acquisition. You know, I mean, anybody here, if you haven't run Facebook ads yet, or tried it, you know, there's a reason why, you know, the quality is terrible. The show rate is terrible, right? The lifetime value is terrible. The churn is so high with acquiring customers from some of these channels. It's because when I want to solve a problem or achieve a goal, and with my health or fitness, I do not open up Facebook or Instagram to go looking, you know, for a personal trainer, right? I go into an app when I'm want to talk to my friends and family, when I want to be distracted or entertained, you know, in my life, when I want to pass funny videos back and forth with my friends, right? And I go there for that. I don't go there for research or for, you know, if I need a locksmith, I don't pull up an Instagram, you know, I go to Google, right? Or that kind of thing. So we want to understand really what role advertising plays. It can play a role. It should definitely not be the foundation of your business. And it's a good way to lose money quickly. And ultimately, you got to have all those things in place to support good customer acquisition. And then, you know, and then this can add a layer. But please don't make it the foundation, because you'll go broke and you're going to bring on crappy customers that don't stick around in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah, my only hesitation with the advertising stuff is it just all the mythology that seems to surround it with, and the fakery that seems to surround a lot of this stuff. Whereas, you know, if you're talking about partnerships and referrals and PR and SEO, some of the organic stuff, there's not a lot of mythology that exists around it. Maybe some people stretch the truth a little bit, or maybe, you know, give a bit more credit to where credit's due. But people talk some absurd bullshit in paid advertising to the point where it's like, that makes people want to go all in and go, what? You spent $500 on Facebook and you got 500 grand of customers in a year? Like, that's crazy. Like, no one says that about referrals, you know? People just like, you know, I set up this really good referral campaign and I got like 10 new clients and 8 of them converted. And it was really good. And it's like, there's nothing crazy. Like 1,000 people walked in the door from a referral campaign. So that's the only thing I don't like about advertising, even though, like you said, it's effective. It just, there's a lot of fuckery around it and it punishes you the hardest. A failed referral campaign usually doesn't, you know, have you out of pocket thousands of dollars, but a really bad advertising campaign can damage your brand, one, which we've done in the past, but you can be out of pocket thousands of dollars, which you've also done. So it is it's a scary place to make a mistake, especially if you're banking on it being like the thing and like being so reliant on it. So yeah, I would just be careful with that sort of stuff. So that's probably enough said about advertising, especially be careful of businesses that their only thing is they just help you with advertising and they don't bring all this other stuff into the fold that we've talked about. But the last thing that's important here is just the self-sufficiency metric, which is what you've always talked about in MPE. And I think it's a great place to end on. I think you can round it out here with just kind of explaining to the audience the self-sufficiency metric that ties marketing together.
Yep. So self-sufficiency is really around what can I grow my business with, you know, from a combination of referrals, reactivations, you know, things that produce like business from inside the business, right? And I don't have to spend money in external advertising or other things that bring in the business. And it's really important to develop this. You know, I talked about referrals being a foundation, right? But self-sufficiency pulls in a few other layers that essentially is around your business, the things you're doing in your business with your customers support growth of your business, right? And so when you can do that, that's a very good metric result to achieve. We can measure that. We can quantify it. It's a great thing to lead your business to and to focus on measuring, and it will change, you know, the future for your business. So, and when you can grow from self-sufficiency, and you know, you're retaining good clients, which means you've got a great experience and means you're bringing the right customer in the right way, all those things. And you're able to grow self-sufficiency. Again, this is the thing. Then you don't ever have to worry about growing your business. You're running such a great business that everybody, you know, is happy and the thing is growing and it's self-sustaining. And that should be the vision of what you work towards and how you start to measure, you know, how to get to that place.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of the good, successful business owners at Lockroom, that's one thing I hear from them all the time, is that they spend money on some of this marketing stuff, but a lot of them always say, man, I'm so lucky. I just don't have to like market my business. I just get so many referrals that it just really grows itself in reactivation. So like, yeah, I just don't have to spend much money on advertising, if any. And that's like a common theme. And that's, I guess, why they're a client of Lockroom, because their businesses are successful, because they do so many things right that it's self-sufficient. It just builds business upon business because they do such a good job. And at some point, they'll grow so big that they'll want to spend and do different kinds of acquisition, client acquisition strategies, but they don't need to. They don't need to. It's self-sufficient. So anyway, that is a great place to finish. I want to give you the last words here, Sean, but next week, guys, we will be talking about the team, which I'm excited to talk about in the next episode. But Sean, final words of wisdom to round out the marketing episode.
Yeah, it's an easy place to get overwhelmed and confused. If you're feeling that way after this conversation, I totally feel you. been working on this stuff for, you know, more than 15 years, almost 20 years now. And I continue to learn every day and teach it every day. To keep it really simple, you know, what do you need? You need systems, you know, and strategies and a plan that's going to work for bringing the right people in your door. And we want to, you know, we're here to help you make it as simple as possible. And then, you know, not just understanding it, but actually, you know, doing it right. Cause in the day, you want to understand it, but you know, you don't need to spend 15 or 20 years studying it to, you know, in mastery to get the outcome you need. We're here to help you shortcut that process. We're going to help you bring the right people through your door and grow your business the right way. The right people are going to stick around and going to, you know, stay, pay, and refer. So look forward to supporting people more with what we've got. I know we've got a great assessment process, if you haven't heard about it yet. You can go learn more about on the website, and Lachlan, I know you'll tell them about, and we'll give them a link.
Yeah, as always, our website /MPE, themindmuscleproject.com/MPE. That's always a link. We store all the most up to date stuff we're doing with them. So, yeah, if you guys haven't done that business assessment yet, that's your homework between now and next week. We've talked about it every episode. So at this point, if you're hearing it and you haven't done it and you have a business, you're a fucking idiot. So go do it now. That's your homework. So guys, thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the Mind Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the Mind Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.